Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, making sense of your money, one money talk at a time. Let's get talking. Welcome, money buddies, to this episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and today's a very special episode. This episode is going to be a recording of a recent presentation that I did at my local library, and I'm going to play the presentation as well as have some slides on the video version. So be sure to head over to YouTube or Spotify and watch the video version for some extra content there. But I'm going to add some commentary throughout the episode and provide some extra ideas, thoughts, and insights. So this should be a fantastic episode, and I'm really excited for this one. I do have a few money talking points that we will go over at the end, but please let me know what you think about this episode. It's like nothing I've ever done before, so this is going to be really interesting to try out and see how it goes. But let me know what you think. Shoot me an email or reply on Spotify or on YouTube. But let's go ahead and get into it today. The money talking points for this week are: what tip can you take from today's episode and implement it into your budget? 2. Can I survive a $400 emergency? And 3. What does budgeting on last month's income mean to me? With the money talking points in mind, let's get talking. Here we go. I'm going to turn the time over to my recording, and I'm going to pause throughout it to provide some feedback, provide some additional insights. But without further ado, let's turn it over to my presentation about budgeting tips and tricks at my local library. My name is Skylar Fleming. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to present to you all. Thank you for coming. I really do appreciate it. It's fun to see other people and know who I'm talking to a little bit, because like you said, I do a podcast, which is me speaking to a computer screen a lot of the time. So thank you everyone for coming out. But today we're going to be talking about some tips and tricks, and we're not just going to be going through just the simple how to budget, because I think everyone knows you got to put your money and give it a goal. I'm going to kind of give you some strategies that you can walk through when it comes to like your mindset and figuring out how to handle your money, either together or single. Here's a little bit of a roadmap of what we're going to be talking about today. We'll get back to the basics with some stats and some simple basic facts about budgeting. I want to talk a lot especially about the power of tracking and what tracking your data and expenses can help you naturally with. Savings buckets, these are a very powerful tool that can help a lot of people when it comes to actually reaching those targets that you set and using your money in the ways that you really want to. And I also want to make sure to hit on the dangers of credit card interest. The main thing that I think is going to help a lot of people is this idea of budgeting on last month's income, because that's one where it gets you out of that paycheck to paycheck cycle, and I'm excited to talk about that one in more detail. The power of automation is what we're going to talk about with saving first, budget meetings, and then we'll wrap it up with no spend challenges, and then of course questions and a quick summary at the end. But let's dive into the basics. So you'll see a couple stats here that honestly I wouldn't be shocked if they're higher since these studies were published, but 37% of Americans can't afford a $400 emergency. That's maybe a flat tire or something simple like that can quickly get up to $400, where maybe you're taking time off work. So if you're working hourly, your paychecks are less. Like those sort of things compound in a big way that if you don't have that kind of money can really carry a lot of weight on you. And then 47% of adults carry credit card debt. And the main thing to know is if either of these two stats apply to you, it's okay, because I carry credit card debt. And the reason being is because my wife and I, we have our financial foundation in order, so we're able to take advantage of promotions and things like that. But plain and simple, we carry credit card debt. But once you begin to learn and understand how credit card interest works or credit card rewards works, you can begin to use these things in your favor instead of feeling like the credit card companies are taking advantage of you. But the main point to take away here is to be willing to go back to cash or a debit card. Go back to those simple ways if things like credit cards are frustrating you or confusing you. Because once you get that foundation in order, then you can begin to trickle in those things that seem a little bit more complex or confusing. I want to jump in here with some additional thoughts about getting back to the basics. And really what I was trying to get at is that it's a great idea to go back to cash or a debit card, because it allows you to realize exactly what you're spending. And I will talk about it later, but one of the main things my wife and I did when we first got married was use a debit card. And that was a huge help to us. And it can be a huge help to really everybody out there, because if you're one of the people who can't afford a $400 emergency or you're carrying a credit card balance, it's okay. Plenty of people do. But realize getting back to the basics and beginning to understand your financial foundation can be a huge deal when it comes to getting your finances back in order. So going back to cash or going back to a debit card should be something that is almost applauded. Don't feel like you have to chase credit card rewards, because you'll hear me talk about it a little bit later when I talk about credit card interest. Those credit card companies are just dying to make a profit off of you. So if you can get away from them, go back to cash or go back to a debit card and get your finances in order and get them under control, then you have everything else under control. So you have to make sure you understand your spending and how that works. And a debit card can be a huge tool for that. But let's get back to the presentation and talk about tracking your expenses. Next, I want to talk about tracking your expenses. And this doesn't have to be the big complicated logging every single expense, going through a big spreadsheet, because I know those can tend to be intimidating. But what it does allow you to do is it allows you to visualize your spending and see those areas where you can naturally adjust your spending. The main thing for me when I started tracking my expenses, I was doing it kind of I went down a rabbit hole on YouTube in high school, and I was like, okay, I'll try tracking my expenses. And I realized quickly that I was spending way too much money eating out. Like, most of my paycheck was going to eating out with my friends. But through tracking, I was able to notice that and naturally mention to my friends, hey, I was spending like $400 or $500 a month or something like that eating out. We should try to cut back on that. And all my friends agreed, because they didn't realize it either. So when you just start tracking, you're going to be able to easily identify where you can cut back. And it's going to be a whole lot easier versus just saying, oh, I feel like we're eating out a lot. I feel like we're spending a lot on groceries. When you track it, you could put numbers and data to that decision, and it makes it a whole lot easier to either get on the same page or naturally make that decision yourself. It also allows you to understand where you may value spending money. For me and my friends, we enjoyed eating out. It was our time hanging out together and things like that. So maybe we didn't want to cut back on it completely because that's where we enjoyed spending money. And through tracking, maybe I was able to find some other areas where we could cut back a little bit so that it was okay. But where do you get started when it comes to tracking? Well, it's very likely your bank's app or your credit union's app does it for you automatically. There's a great tool called Empower Personal Dashboard. It's one of those where you can connect your accounts to. There's also, of course, the paid apps like Monarch and Quicken and things like that that will do it for you automatically. But every time you use a card, those stores are being categorized automatically for you. And these apps will just show you a quick breakdown. They'll show you in fun little charts and whatever of how your spending is going. And this has actually recently helped my sister out. I helped get her set up with one of these apps just through her credit union that it started to categorize her expenses for her. And I told her, just go back through the last month so far, categorize them so that these bubbles, as they show on her app, look correct. And she told me, like, the next week her friends were saying, hey, do you guys want to go out to eat? And she said, I didn't want to see my bubble fill up that fast. So just that little bit of data has empowered her to make a better spending decision that she's been trying to go for honestly years, but a little bit of visualization with the data was a huge help for her. All right, the next thing I want to talk about here is something that is really powerful for my wife and I, and that's what we like to call them sinking funds. The Dave Ramsey crowd will call them sinking funds. They can also be called savings buckets. What these are is essentially breaking down your larger expenses into a monthly subscription to yourself. So often we're paying $10 or $20 to these businesses to give them our money every single month, but sometimes maybe you can even save by going to an annual subscription, or there's things in our life like Christmas comes up every single year, yet it catches so many people off guard. There's birthday presents that we're paying for every year. Car registration's a big one that can sneak up on people. Or like I wrote here, an annual subscription, maybe it's $20, $30 cheaper to do it annually versus monthly. And what you can do here with the sinking fund is you break down that total cost over multiple months, and it allows you to budget for it each month. So your $120 a year purchase becomes $10 a month. And that's a whole lot easier to stomach. That's why all these companies want us signing up for monthly subscriptions, because it's so much easier for us to just allow $10 a month to go out of our account. So if you can save it in reverse and kind of pay yourself in a way, and I'll go over some of the math here in a second, but it's pretty simple. But it's a great way to pay a monthly subscription to yourself so that when that big expense does come, you already have it saved up. I know companies like Mint Mobile is a great one that does 3, 6, or 12 month plans, but you have to pay for it all up front versus a monthly like bill. you have to pay for it all up front. So if you use this to begin to save for it monthly, it's going to allow you a lot of time to save for that. So here's a little bit of the math. It's that simple. Just divide it by the amount of time you have to save for it. So Christmas, $600, just as an example, $50 a month. Car registration, $12 a month when you just break it down. The math is as simple as look at the total you're looking to spend and divide it by the amount of months or budgets you have. And maybe you budget every 2 weeks, then times it by two, just the amount of times you have to budget until then, and break it down into that cost. And then you just simply write it down and you move it into a separate savings account, which I'll talk about in a second with the power of automation. Having a separate savings account for things like this can be huge, because then you know the money is earmarked for something else. Like my wife and I, we went to Hawaii at the end of last year, and that money was saved up for a long time. And there were, of course, other expenses that came up over that time. And if we wouldn't have had it written down somewhere or earmarked in a separate account, we could have easily spent it, because our tire went flat on a drive to a basketball game. Like, things like that can quickly take away your savings if you're not writing them down and earmarking them. So this could be a huge strategy towards saving money and keeping it allocated towards exactly what you want to spend it on. Is there any questions about sinking funds? Because I know sometimes the math can throw people off a little bit. Or is there any examples that are coming to your guys' mind about how you could use this? I want to share a great tip here that was mentioned when I asked the audience about examples to use sinking funds for. The tip that was mentioned, instead of budgeting it based on 12 months, the person suggested doing it based on 11 months. And this is honestly a great idea because, one, that allows you to save a little bit more each month so that when the time does come to spend it, if the price increased or anything like that, you have that buffer naturally built in. Plus, you may only end up with 11 budget cycles till it's time to purchase it again. And sure, you may have the actual month that you are paying for it in. You may have that budget to put a little bit more towards it. But if you do it by 11, then you already have the money there. And honestly, 11 and 12 months is not a huge difference. It's honestly still going to be pretty easy for you to use a sinking fund in this way. And I think that's a great tip. I really liked that dividing it by 11 instead of 12, if you're doing it for a year, that can really help, because things like car registration go up a little bit more than you expect each time you have to use it, or maybe your subscription increase, things like that. So if you divide it by 11 instead of 12, or maybe 10, so that you're saving a little bit more than you need, then maybe you'll even have a little bit of extra savings at the end. This has happened to my wife and I, where we've done it over 9 or 10 or 11 months. And then by the time we get to the end where we want to use the money, we have way more than we need. And we can maybe splurge on something a little bit nicer, or we can use that extra savings towards a different savings goal that we have. It can make a huge difference. And it's really only a small little amount difference if you're trying to do it in one or two budgeting cycles quicker when you're using a sinking fund. So that question was fantastic. That comment during the library presentation was fantastic. So I just wanted to make sure to include that since you couldn't hear it on the presentation. But let's get back to it and talk about credit card interest. Next, I want to talk about one of the things that can be the real death to most people's finances, and that's credit card interest. And like I said, I carry a credit card balance, but it has a 0% promotion right now. It's what I use to pay for my CFP course. So in essence, it's almost a 0% student loan. But of course, we had to figure out a plan to make sure that was paid off in time, because the one thing about those promotions is if you don't pay them off in time, that's when they really get you. They hit you with the big interest payment. Some of them have rules in them that if you don't pay it off by the end of that, all the interest back pays. They can be really scary. So you have to make sure you have a plan before you start really messing around with credit cards. But here's an example of that credit card. So it has just about $3,000 on it. And I put it in here. The minimum amount it wants due right now is $40. And $40, it actually came back and said that's not able to be paid off. Like, it would just never pay it off with the way the interest rate is. It would just go on forever. So I upped it to 80, and it still takes almost 5 years to pay it off at that amount. Now, of course, if you put more, it would shrink down. But the main thing to know here about credit cards, if you're carrying a credit card debt, continuing to use the credit card is going to make it so you can really never pay it off, because it's just going to keep ticking that balance up just as you try to keep paying it off, because it's already going to take long enough just paying the minimum payment. Yet if you're adding transactions to your credit card, that can be really hard to get out from under that. So that's where we can go back to the basics at the beginning with some cash or a debit card for a little bit of time, because one of the things that really helped my wife and I when we started doing our finances together when we got married was we used a debit card for about 6 months, which allowed us to see everything coming out. It helped us get an idea of how much we were actually spending, because we have a credit card that has like a 10,000 limit on it. We're never going to use that much, but it's dangerous if you don't have a handle on your spending at first, because that's a big giant amount of money you can use on the credit card. And then the other thing to note here is, why do credit cards get pushed so heavily? Think about it from an investing standpoint. If you were able to get a 19 or 20% rate of return on any investment, you would be shoveling all your money towards that as fast as possible, which is exactly what the credit card companies do. They shovel all their money in terms of promotions and marketing and deals where they're trying to get you in these, because once they can get you with a little bit of interest, it's all profit for them. So that's just a little bit of a way to flip it of why are credit cards so valuable for these companies. It's because they have such high interest rates. So that's why these are so crucial to be careful with. And there's nothing wrong with using a credit card. You just have to make sure you're aware of how to actually use it and use it safely. Okay, I mentioned this as being a huge freedom point for really everyone. Budgeting based on last month's income. I like to call it the first step of financial independence. And if you don't know what financial independence is, please come talk to me. I'd love to chat about it. But budgeting based on last month's income is where you have enough money in your savings that you're not worrying about your paychecks as they come in. So you're essentially saying, here's how much money we made, let's say for the month of February. Let's use that as an example. So all your paychecks come in for February, and then at the end of February, you're able to say, I made $3,000 in the month of February. And then in March, you give that money a job to each of the different categories you have, like groceries or gas or rent or things like that. And then as March is going on, you're spending that money that you made in February, and then you're not worrying about each paycheck as they come in. This is a huge help when it comes to not needing to wait for Thursday or Friday to get gas, or you don't need to wait till Thursday or Friday to pay rent, because you know the money you're planning to use for the month is already there. It gives yourself a 1 month buffer to get out of that paycheck to paycheck cycle. I do have just a quick breakdown, and I talked through these steps, but here's just a quick breakdown on how to do this. You calculate 1 month's income, and if it is varied, just use a conservative estimate. So if you make between $3,000 and $3,200, just settle on $3,000, because then you're gonna almost naturally build up some savings if you're using a conservative estimate. Figure how much savings you already have. Maybe you already have a few thousand dollars in the bank that you could use to get to this number. And then this is one of the things that I like to say, set a really buckle down and get through it kind of plan, where you can build up that savings, because this is gonna be such a point of freedom once you're able to get to the point where you have enough income saved. So figure out the gap between the two, how much you already have saved and your monthly income, and then set a plan to save that up. That way you can begin to have 1 month's income saved up and go beyond that, honestly, to an emergency fund. But I think this is a great basic starting point to get to. So like I said, look at your pay stub, see how much take-home pay you have, figure out and make sure you have enough savings there. And then you can budget that amount of money for the next month so that you're not worried about paychecks as they come in. Next, I want to talk about direct deposit, which can be a super powerful tool. I think it's honestly very underutilized. Most people know that they can have their paychecks automatically deposited into their bank account. I think it's a pretty simple thing at this point, but there's a lot more potential that the direct deposit tool has available. You can make it go to wherever you want. If you have an IRA, an individual retirement account set up, you can send some money that way. And one of the main things that I have started teaching people lately is having separate accounts. So like I said, with the sinking funds, maybe you have a completely separate account that houses those savings. But this is another thing my sister started doing recently, is she was having a hard time not transferring that savings right to checking right away. So she set up a separate account where the money can go to completely separate, that has a lot more friction behind it, that maybe she doesn't even have an online access, like an online login to. She maybe has to go to the bank to transfer it or take a little bit of extra steps. And that's allowed her to keep her savings put away. She knows how much money she has to spend because it's still in her checking. And that money is just tucked away in savings. And occasionally she'll check it and be like, wow, I have $2,000 or $3,000 or something like that in there. And she's just completely forgotten about it. So completely separate accounts can be a big deal, and it can be really helpful. Because like that middle column says, it gives you permission to spend, because you know the amount in your checking is what you are allowed to spend, or what you've given yourself permission to spend, because the rest is already tucked away in savings. So whatever's in that checking, go ahead and spend it, because that's when it's fun, when we give ourselves permission to spend and we know we have everything else working in the background. All right, got a few more things here, but one of the other really powerful things that I've learned over the last several years is a budget meeting. And that QR code is a brand new guide that I just put out that has some tips and plans on having a good budget meeting, including a budget meeting agenda, and there's a spreadsheet template and such in there. But the benefits of a budget meeting, it allows you to get on the same page, and it allows you to get on the same page at a scheduled time, because so often money fights or money arguments happen because they come out of the blue, because one person sees maybe a bunch of Amazon boxes show up, or a couple things at the grocery store that one person thought you didn't need, or things like that. and you spend way more time thinking about money than you care to think about money. So I like to say set a scheduled time to talk about money so that everything can be saved until then. And it makes it a whole lot easier. It reduces anxiety because you know that conversation is going to come up. You know you're going to be able to work through that challenge you're going through at a specific time. And I like to say you can either spend maybe 1 to 2 hours a specific time each month, or you can spend many hours not being able to sleep at night because you're thinking about money, not being able to have a peaceful dinner because you're worried about how much it costs, things like that. But when you can set a specific time, you can set goals together, you can make progress on your goals, and you can give your money a job. So the main place to start with this is to just create like a simple Word document or a notebook, anything like that. Write down your ideas that you want to talk about, schedule a time and discuss either together if you're married, or if you're not married and you're doing finances on your own, still put it on the calendar and maybe see if there's some friend that you can bounce ideas off of, or have an accountability partner. I like to call them money buddies, like a gym buddy, where you can stay accountable to each other with your goals. And then allow your budget meeting to change and grow over time. My wife and I's, ours has changed completely from the beginning. At the beginning, it was just simple, write down what we want to talk about. And it was usually me wanting to talk about way more than we had time to. That's why we started doing this budget meeting, is I found myself just bombarding her with, hey, let's invest in this, let's do this with our money. All these sort of different rabbit holes I was diving down, and she was like, this is way too much. So we started scheduling times, and I know it seems businessy or it can seem a little weird to schedule a time and have an agenda, but that allows you to set a specific time where you're working on things together and where you're like committing time to think about your money. Last tip and trick that I have here is a no spend challenge. And this is one to kind of keep in your back pocket, because this can be a big deal for getting a reset. When we feel like our spending is getting out of control, or our spending has been maybe a little too much, or especially after Christmas and the holidays are over, we usually like to take a no spend week. And how you can do this is identify those things that you need. Obviously there's things like gas or groceries that can't maybe wait until the end, but with some proper planning, you can get ahead of it so that you truly don't have to spend any money. And I like to say, start with one day and make it a day where you're likely to spend money, like a Friday or a Saturday. If you don't usually spend money on Sundays or Mondays, that's kind of cheating if you do a no spend day on those days. So identify one day to start with and say, hey, can we push ourselves to not spend money on this day? Whether it's finding something free to do, or going on a walk instead of going to wherever you might go, or not getting a drink on the way home. And then see if you can go for a week or more, because a no spend week allows you to really reset your spending. It allows you to get a grip on, hey, all the Amazon boxes stop showing up. That feels a little bit different. And you're able to take a deep breath about your spending. It gives you maybe a time to talk about realigning it. Maybe this is a good time for a budget meeting in the same window, but they can really help you out. And I know they're super helpful for my wife and I. That does it. Here's what we covered today. We went through the basics, some tracking, savings buckets, credit card interest, which can be really a killer of most people's budgets. Last month income and being a huge step on the path to financial independence. Savings first, remember direct deposit with separate accounts can help you keep your savings hidden away. And budget meetings can help you with setting a specific time to make progress on your money goals. Now that the presentation's over, I did get asked a question about my recommendations on getting out of credit card debt or how people can reset to the basics. So I'm going to leave that in here because I do think it was some good advice that really anyone can use if they're buried in credit card debt or struggling with credit card debt. So I'm going to turn the time back over to my presentation here where I answer a question about credit card debt. Yeah, getting out of credit card debt, I would definitely say you got to cut back to the basics, because it can be such a heavy burden to try to get out of it while you're like coasting with credit cards. It can be a pretty rough start, I think, is what I found with most of the people I'm coaching, is trying to set that plan can be a bit of a leap to try to get to it. But going back to the basics and spending on cash is gonna help you realize what you can actually afford and what living below your means actually could look like for you. The tip of freezing the credit cards and actually getting rid of them is a good one. That's one of those behavioral tips that can shift your mindset around to it. I think the other thing that's key for people to realize with credit card debt is you're not the only one that's in credit card debt. Like, these companies push and market so much to land people in credit card debt. So I think that can be really freeing for people when they realize that it's not entirely their fault that they're in that situation, because there's so much consumerism and marketing around all of it. But then ultimately it's just setting a plan of what you can do. There's two major methods. There's the debt snowball and the debt avalanche. The debt snowball is the biggest one for behavioral finance side of things, because that means you're paying off those smallest balances first and using that momentum to build your snowball bigger and bigger. And the snowball is how much money you're putting towards your debt. And the avalanche one is a much more mathematical approach if you're a math kind of person and want to see the biggest interest rates get paid down so that you're saving the most on interest. But I would recommend most people go the snowball route and start with your smallest balance to get those quick wins of saying, oh, I got 3 credit cards paid off. And it doesn't really matter, like paying off the $300 credit card debt versus the maybe $1,000 or $2,000 doesn't feel a whole lot different in the beginning. Like it's gonna give you that drive and motivation towards it. So identify the small ones that you can knock out quickly, but really getting back to basics with a simple budget is going to be really helpful for people. And it doesn't even have to be a full budget in terms of sitting down and categorizing every single expense. It could be as simple as, like I said, having a separate account where your savings is going there, and then you're giving yourself permission to spend the rest, because that can be, that goes to that limit, don't eliminate principle, where you're giving yourself permission to spend the money instead of saying, oh, I can't spend anything, and feeling like you're trying to restrict yourself so much. Thank you to my local library for allowing me to come and present on budgeting. It was really fun. It was fun to see some people, interact with some people, talk about money. I do have some money talking points from this episode that I'd like to talk about real quick here. The first one is, what tip can you take from today's episode and implement it into your budget? To me, the no spend challenge one is an obvious one. It's such a simple tip to implement to really help you get reset with your spending, because I know my wife and I, we have found so many times where our spending is running away from us. It feels like we're buying something on Amazon every couple hours and boxes are showing up endlessly. And a no spend challenge can be a huge deal towards getting back in control with your spending. And it can honestly be kind of fun to push yourself, because someone will suggest, hey, can we buy this? And you say, no, we're on a no spend week. And then they're, oh yeah, that's right. So that can be pretty fun too to have. But budget meetings are another great thing you can implement. Make sure you go download the budget meeting guide and check out my episode from a couple weeks ago, where we had a special announcement about the budget meeting guide. Lots more details in that episode. But what did you take away? Let me know in an email or leave a comment online. But the second money talking point is, can I survive a $400 emergency? Thankfully, my wife and I are in a situation where we can. But if you're in a situation where you cannot, that's okay. And let this be your wake-up call to get that basic emergency fund under your feet so that your financial life isn't destroyed by what should be a simple emergency. And a long, long time ago, I had an episode about the emergency fund. And the emergency fund, I say it turns emergencies into slight inconveniences. How big of a deal would that be for you if you could take those emergencies that you would imagine destroying your financial life or just giving you the worst headache of all time and turn it into a slight inconvenience? Because it feels like there's a large gap between emergency and slight inconvenience. And having a basic emergency fund can be that bridge that gets you between that gap. And it can be a huge time saver, honestly, a huge benefit for your mental health. If you're struggling with getting an emergency fund set up, this could be a great time to schedule a free money talk using the link in my show notes or at moneytalkwithskylarfleming.com/chat. We can take 15 to 30 minutes to just chat about a plan to get an emergency fund in place for you. The third money talking point is, what does budgeting on last month's income mean to me? Well, to me, it's an opportunity. It's a huge deal. It makes it so much easier where we don't have to worry about our paychecks coming in. It's so nice knowing that our current month's income is just sitting there waiting to be used. It provides my wife and I with such a nice buffer, and I know it can provide you with that buffer as well. And it's almost an automatic emergency fund that if the worst were to happen, it gives us some time to prepare, where we do have an extra amount of income in our savings account, and then we will know exactly how much we have to budget with the next month, or we can apply some money towards that emergency right away because we have that buffer naturally built in. So once you're able to put some money towards your goals, we know exactly how much we have left to budget, and it takes really the guesswork out of budgeting. It makes it so much easier to save for things. What does it mean to you? If you're able to budget on last month's income, what does it mean to you? If not, what would it mean to you if you could? What would it mean to you if you didn't have to wait for a paycheck to come in to get gas or to pay rent or to buy groceries? I think that can be a huge mental shift for people when you start to think about the fact that you can purchase something when you want to because you know the money is there, versus having to wait on a paycheck or being so reliant on a job. But that does it for today's three money talking points. Let's wrap it up real quick here because I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to check out my free budget meeting guide. The link is in the top of the show notes. I hope you were able to enjoy today's episode. I know it was a different one. I know it was a different style. Thank you for dealing with the two different types of mics. But I think this episode is going to be really helpful. And there's some great slides on YouTube or on the video version on Spotify that I'd recommend you head over and check out so you get those extra bits of content. But that does it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed these tips about budgeting. Please consider sharing with a friend. I would really love to see this podcast grow and begin to get more and more listens for every single episode, and I can't do that without your help sharing it. So whether it's sharing this episode or sharing me as a potential guest to go on another podcast, it all helps. And I appreciate each one of you listening and sharing. But thank you for listening to this episode. The best way to stay up to date with all things Money Talk is to sign up for my email list. Head over to moneytalkwithskylarfleming.com and submit your name and email right there on the homepage. You can also use the contact page on my website to send me any questions you might have. If you're looking to get started with budgeting, I've partnered with My Budget Coach, a platform that connects your budget directly with your financial coach. I'd love to help you over there and help you get started with budgeting. The link is in the show notes. Remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about today's topic with a fellow money buddy. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,